Thank you for joining us for part two of our interview with Eisner-nominated comics creator Troy Hickman. In part two, we have a more freeform discussion, not necessarily relating to Twilight Guardian specifically, or Troy's work. We did promise to do a fan questions. Unfortunately, we ran into a technical difficulty where my editing software ate some of your questions. So I apologize for that, and I apologize to Troy, who gave very well thought out answers to your questions, but unfortunately we won't be able to listen to them as of now. But we did get around to asking Twilight Guardian herself some questions at her Facebook fan page, and Troy answers those questions, and it spins us off into some interesting discussions about the state of the industry and just comic books in general. So I hope you enjoy this. Stay to the end of the interview for more details on how you can use StashMyComics.com to collect points, to win stuff in giveaways. So now let's listen to the interview.
I actually asked, because you can find Twilight Guardian on Facebook, and I went to her Twilight Guardian internet file, the TGIF, and asked her if she had some questions for you. And she did.
You can't do that, man. She's insane.
Well, we'll see. She says, do you feel a certain responsibility when chronicling the exploits of superheroes, whether real or fictional, in the way they're depicted?
Probably in a couple of different ways. I mean, for one thing, I am not a fan of, generally speaking, of the anti-hero. And there's a quote that I end up quoting this a lot, so excuse me if I'm repeating myself, but there's a quote that I believe it goes something like, the anti-hero is postmodern man's way of saying, I give up. And I think there is some truth to that. And because of that, I don't want to add to that sort of mentality. I want people to look at a superheroic figure and hopefully be inspired by them. Now, that doesn't mean they cannot be realistic, and I think people would be hard-pressed to look at something like, say, Common Grounds and say that my superhero characters are less realistic than, you know, most other superheroes. I don't think that's true. But, you know, it's sort of like, and I've used this as an example before, and somebody's probably going to call me on this. I forget who wrote the series, but There was an Adam Strange series in the, I don't know, it was probably the late 80s or early 90s. And in it, if I recall, Adam Strange, the character, his wife is pregnant, and she's, of course, you know, light years away from him. And he's on Earth at the time. And he ends up kind of, I think he might stop himself before he takes it all the way, but it's like he starts to, you know, maybe get into a romantic affair with another woman while his pregnant wife is on another planet. And, you know, I read that at the time and I was so bothered by that. Not because I'm naive and I don't realize that, yes, people have affairs, even on their pregnant wives, unfortunately, but because this was Adam Strange, right? I mean, here's this character that I had read for years and years, and I thought he was a pretty cool character. But given the nature of the character, not just that he was a decent man, but here's a guy who primarily, you know, would catch the Zeta beam and go these, you know, trillions of light years or wherever from Earth. But he primarily did that so he could be with this woman on another planet that he loved. And I've gone through some of this myself. I mean, my girlfriend lives 2,200 miles away from me, right? So I can kind of relate to this. You have to have a certain level of commitment to try to make that kind of thing work, especially over the long haul. And I read that at the time, and I just thought, you know, I realize maybe this writer is trying to say a particular thing, but why did this have to be Adam Strange? He could have done this with anybody else. He could have come up with a concept, but we have so many writers these days who seem to want to take these characters that they loved at some other point in their life and really screw them over and really turn them into something that they weren't. And I'm not saying that every hero has to, you know, just be flawless. They should be human. And that's one of the things I think we started to learn when Marvel Comics sprang up, is that, you know, these superheroic characters did not have to be perfect. And that was great. But by that same token, I don't think that we necessarily have to put them on an even keel with the villains that they're dealing with. And sometimes there's not that much difference. So that sort of bothers me. So, yeah, in one respect, I do think that we need to treat these characters, if in fact they are heroes, we need to treat them as such. I'm also bothered by the fact that, you know, I realize that a new writer is going to bring something new to a particular superhero book. And sometimes that's going to be great because you're going to have Alan Moore take over Swamp Thing and suddenly do really great stuff with it. But there's also a tendency sometimes in comics to just basically, you know, just say, well, the hell with what the previous writers did. I'm going to do this. And that bothers me. So it's going to be a tough call if I suddenly were to start writing some mainstream comic with a long established character. You know, I don't want to do anything that's going to slap the readers in the face if this is a character that they love. I haven't written too many characters that come out of, you know, that have been around for a long time. I did a couple issues of Witchblade, and I did a Hulk story for Actor Comics Presents. And in both of those, I tried to, you know, to the best that I could, leave the character untouched. I mean, try to give it my own take, but you know, not just kind of, you know, spit all over the character as they previously existed. So I guess that's how I'd answer that one.
You sort of answer the next question that she has, which is, do you think the nature of superheroes has changed in the 80 years or so of their existence?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting thing because if you look at the trajectory of the superhero, when they first started, I mean, they really kind of came out of the pulps. And if you look at those early heroes, they share a lot of things with the pulp characters. But then as the years went on, you know, they became kind of glossier, kind of more, you know, Superman as the helpful policeman on the corner kind of mentality. So they became a little bit more sanitized, I guess, from the pulps, which were, you know, kind of gritty and darker. And then probably starting in, I don't know, around the 80s or so, mid 80s probably, they started kind of darkening up again. And depending, I guess, on what your take is on this, you could go either way about that. As I said, I go for kind of a merge of the stuff. I mean, I really prefer Silver Age comics. I don't, however, necessarily, I'm not one of these guys that say, well, the comics have to be exactly like they were during the Silver Age. That's the characters did not, for the most part, have a lot of depth to them. But I think that there's a middle ground there. I think you can have characters who are still heroic, but do have flaws, who are occasionally going to make the wrong kind of decisions. I don't know. It's an interesting take on comics these days, as far as the nature of superheroes. You can kind of see it in the people at the conventions. You know, when we talked about that earlier, the kind of folks who are at conventions. When I was, you know, a kid in the 70s, we would talk about, you know, who would win in a battle between the Hulk and Thor or you know, the Thing or, you know, that sort of stuff. Is Superman faster than the Flash? That kind of stuff. You know, that's probably always been a constant, I'm guessing. These days, again, it becomes a little bit more the nature of, well, Batman is such a badass, you know, that kind of thing. And it's the, you know, when I was a kid, it was 10-year-olds saying this. When, you know, these days, it's unfortunately, it's still 10-year-olds saying this. So I think they've changed kind of maybe in that respect. I don't know. I know that, as I said, the people that you see reading comics have definitely changed. When I first started going to comic book conventions, it was a very nerdy crowd. But you know, they were... they were a particular type of person. They were very bright. And there are still a lot of bright people at comic conventions, but sometimes I notice that it's a much more generalized kind of crowd than it used to be. It's not just sort of this cultish kind of nerd element so much as it is just sort of more general population kind of thing. So you have people who are, and as I said, it's different because you have people who are there with girlfriends, which at one time you basically did not see. I think maybe superheroes have partially changed because the readership has changed and maybe they want to see different things. It becomes that whole chicken and egg thing, though. I don't know. I don't know if the nature of the superhero depicted fictionally is because society has changed or not.
Well, the superhero genre, there's something about it that's very malleable that lends itself to reinterpretation. And I think at this point, the superhero has, at least in North America, is no longer a fictional concept. It's a mythology. So it's hard to say if the mythology is there to fit the people or if the people shape the mythology. It's hard to say.
Could well be both. You know, there could be kind of some sort of a symbiotic or endothermic or I don't know, some other big word in there, the ship between the two that, it's hard to say. I mean, it could be life imitating art, imitating life back and forth again. So I don't know.
Twilight Guardian did have a third and final question. She asks, much has been said in recent years about the imbalance, both in readership and in the creative end, of the male-to-female ratio in comics. What do you think can be done to change this, assuming you think it needs to be changed?
Huh. Okay, well, this is a minefield waiting to be stepped on.
So put on your bomb suit.
You know, I don't know. My take on this, it might be a little different from some people's. There's always this assumption, we've heard it a lot in recent decades, that we need to get more female readers in comic readership. And I think that's absolutely true, but I may think it's different for different reasons. Some people seem to think that simply because, well, it should be that way. There should be more females reading comics. And I'm not sure that's the primary reason why we should. I mean, if you look at, say, romance novels or soap operas, those are both industries that have primarily female viewership or readership. And you've never seen a tremendous push from either of them to try to get more males, you know, consuming their product. And the reason for that, presumably, is that they've always had enough of an audience that they didn't need to, you know, try to extend themselves into that other audience, and also partially because they didn't think they'd be successful in doing so. In comics, I think the reason that we need to try to get more females involved in reading comics is because the industry is dying.
We need more readers altogether.
Sure. If we could get, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, if we get male readers or female readers or readers who are neither, if we get, you know, people from the planet Zune reading comics, it shouldn't make any difference. What we need to do is get people reading comics. If we could have just a huge comic industry with nothing but, you know, males reading it, yeah, I'd still probably say, well, let's see if we get more females reading it. But I think the primary reason is simply because it's dying as a medium in some ways. And I think if we can tap into that other, whatever that is, 51% of the population or something, it's a good idea.
One assumes that if the industry is healthy and has a lot of readers, there will be more opportunity to branch out to other types of readers, because you then have your core customers there as a safety net.
Well, yeah, and it becomes an interesting thing because, of course, if comics are doing well, then publishers are making money, which means they're going to have the capital to try different sorts of things. In the kind of financial straits that comic companies are at the moment, they don't really have as much of that opportunity. So they end up just sticking with the standard superhero stuff because it's what has sold, but they're still watching it, you know, greatly diminish from year to year. And we've got Marvel and DC Comics now selling like in the four-digit numbers at times. That's crazy. There were, you know, it wasn't that many decades ago that if you sold, you know, even 100,000 copies of a comic, you'd be canceled. But what happens is, you know, it may be a matter of maybe women are less likely to read superhero comics, right? I mean, they're less likely to see certain types of movies, so maybe, in fact, they're less likely to read superhero comics. So maybe getting them involved is not trying to change the nature of the superhero comic, but simply having kind of the kind of books out there that are going to draw them in. Yeah. But if the industry's dying to begin with, people are not going to be able to take those chances and get those out there. So it becomes this vicious cycle. I think it's an interesting thing, of course, because if you look at, say, manga, that's brought a lot of women into comics. And in some ways you could say, well, maybe that's going to be the savior of comics. The only problem is that you don't see them a lot of women branching out beyond that. Right. They'll keep manga, but they're not necessarily going to pick up an issue of, you know, even something like Wonder Woman and start reading it. And so it's a tough call as to what's going to do that. I'd like to think that I do my part, you know, actually, because if you look at the things that I write, usually I get a lot of great responses from women who read them. And I cannot tell you how many times I have had someone tell me, you know, my wife or girlfriend does not like comics. She doesn't read them, but I gave her Common Grounds or what have you, and she read that and she loved it. So I'm really proud of that. And I ask myself, well, what is it that I'm doing that maybe, you know, they're not getting from other kinds of comics? I think it's largely characterization, because if you look at the other kinds of things that women will kind of gravitate towards, whether it's, you know, soap operas or romance novels or the particular kind of, let's say, romantic comedies they like in terms of movies, things like that, they tend to be things that are characterization heavy as opposed to plot heavy. And if you look at even superhero comics, if you ask yourself, what are the superhero comics that draw women in more than other superhero comics? They're almost always teen comics, right? If you go into a comic shop and you see a woman buying a superhero comic, a lot of times it tends to be like X-Men, right? Or Teen Titans when it was, you know, years ago when George Perez was drawing it and stuff. Those were the comics, and I think that's the common thing. It's because they're comics that allow for a lot of characterization.
Yeah, and the interaction and relationship between the characters, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe it's a matter of, you know, I don't know, of bringing more aspects of that in, because as we know, I mean, comics are, especially superhero comics, do tend to lean pretty heavily on plot. And, you know, that it's one of the reasons I'm not that crazy about them, because I'm not really a plot guy either. I mean, maybe I'm in touch with my feminine side here, but I greatly prefer stuff that's characterization heavy too. So, but as far as getting more women into creating comics, I think that's just something that's going to happen naturally over time. You know, especially if we can get more kind of variety in comics, we're more likely to see that. Because if you ask women, if you ask female comic creators what they want to do, it's amazing how few of them will say, well, I really want to end up writing Spider-Man. You know, it's not really what a lot of them are drawn to. But at the moment, there's not, you know, unless you go to smaller independent companies, there's not a lot, you know, necessarily that's being published that's not in that realm. Most of the stuff that is, this is where it becomes interesting. Because a lot of times in comics now, if there are women working, you find them doing things like adaptations of TV shows or movies, which is interesting because if you look at in the quote-unquote old days, like say the 50s or 60s, when there were actually a lot more women reading comics percentage-wise than there are now, they were largely reading those sorts of comics too. They would be reading the Dell or the Gold Key books that were like adaptations of the TV shows at the time. I mean, even my girlfriend who has, I'm not sure she's ever read a comic, you know, beside the ones that I've written. And it's hard enough to get her to read those. But when she was a kid, the few comics that she did read were those comics, the one that were adaptations of, you know, The Rifleman or F Troop or, you know, those kinds of things, Big Valley, you know. So I think it's mainly if we can get the industry, I don't know. It's it becomes one of these kind of, it's sort of a circular argument, because to get more women working in comics, we may have to have a greater variety of comics being published, but we may not be able to do that until we at least in part have more women writing comics. I don't know. It's a quandary.
In terms of what needs to be done for the industry to become healthier, what do you think of the digital initiative that DC recently announced? Do you think that this format will have anything to do, will help in any way to get comic books in front of more eyeballs and possibly get more sales?
You know, I don't know. It's really hard to speculate on that. Just if you look at it on the surface, it seems like it could potentially be really dangerous, simply because it really may destroy comic retailers. I mean, we'll have to see how it ends up working, but it really could destroy. It's a funny thing too, because it's, in my opinion, largely what has killed comics. I mean, along with the fact that, you know, kids these days have a lot of choices, video games, all that stuff. That's a part of it. But I've always said that one of the things that is really partially responsible for the loss of so much readership is the direct sales system. At the time, right? I mean, I remember in the early 80s when comic shops started springing up, we had the direct sales system in its infancy. And it for a time, it was great. I mean, it was just a wonderful thing. But of course, the problem became that
attrition.
Well, yeah, you because comics has, they used to say about a three-year turnover rate. And they used to make jokes about the fact that as soon as, you know, young boys discovered girls, they stopped reading comics. I'm not sure about the truth of that, but it had a high turnover rate. And so suddenly we weren't getting new people into the field, because the only place that you would see comics was in comic shops.
And it's one of the reasons why I only, though I loved comic books as a kid, the ones I could get my hands on from the library and at school and whatnot, I was never able to become a regular comic reader until I was an adult, because when I was of the age of starting to read comic books at the corner store were on their way out. So I was about an hour's drive away from, you know, I can drive my bike to the comic shop, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's when I was growing up, I would not be writing comics today were it not for the fact that, you know, I was exposed to them at drugstores and supermarkets. You know, you go in there with your mom or your dad and they're right there and you pick one up and then you get interested and you get, you know, but that doesn't happen, because if you don't read comic books already, there's almost no chance you're just suddenly going to wander into a comic shop.
And that could potentially happen if they're available online.
Yeah, see, that's where it becomes interesting, because the whole internet concept of comics may now destroy the comic shop, you know, that sprung up because of direct sales. Now the question then becomes, well, there are a lot of questions, but do comics survive as an industry if they become basically just a digital construction, presumably then probably also with like collections of them in book form?
Right.
It's hard to say. At this moment, I'm not sure there's anybody that's in touch enough with the comic industry and who knows enough about the trends of readership that they can tell you with any certainty what's going to happen in, say, the next 5 years.
And I think the people who do have access to all that information, the sales numbers and all that, are probably in the dark as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. And I'm all for whatever needs to be done to get more people reading comic books.
Yeah, that's going to be the key to all of this. If readership dwindles enough, it doesn't matter what format they're in. It's not going to make any difference. We need to get such bigger numbers than we have now, really, to make this. See, the thing is, comics in some ways are still profitable for the publishers, but they're still profitable because of licensing and merchandising. And, of course, we know that comics have largely become kind of the farm team here, you know, for making movies and TV shows.
Yeah.
And we've got to get beyond that. If we come to the point where that's the only purpose of comics, it's the industry's not going to survive.
No, because the next trend's going to come along, and it's going to be the same problem from the 90s again, where all the eggs were in the direct market basket. And if all the eggs are in the licensing basket, that's not a good thing either.
Absolutely, yeah.
Thank you once again for listening to our interview with Troy Hickman. If you liked this content and would like more, go to the stashmycomics.com/blog for lots more interviews, reviews, and articles. If you would like to collect points from stashmycomics.com to buy tickets for chances to win excellent prizes and giveaways, register a free account if you haven't already, and you can begin rating your comic books and stashing your collection, and you can upload data to our database. For all of these things, you'll gain points and be able to purchase lots of tickets for many chances to win excellent prizes. So until next time, may the force be with you. Live long and prosper. Excelsior.